The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Families that go here, grow here.
Let me say good morning to our guest this morning, Juliana Crowley. Good morning, Juliana.
Good morning, Ryan.
And thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Strange question I'll begin with, but I'll begin with it anyway. What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were little?
I suppose I wanted to be a teacher originally. Ah. That's sort of what I was thinking when I filled out my CEO form 12 years ago. But that's not the way, that's not the road I went down. I became a hospital chaplain.
And how did you... Well, tell me about the fork in the road where you were going, teaching, whoa, swerve, hospital chaplain. What, tell me about that.
I went to St. Patrick's College in Maynooth, and people usually understand that to be the place where they train the priest. That's what patients always say to me. But actually, lay people can attend there as well for the undergraduate and postgraduate degrees. Mm-hmm. And when I was in third year, I suppose that's the point in, I was doing my theology and arts degree that, you know, you have to make decisions around whether you'll go down the teaching road or where you'll divert your life. And at that stage, I was thinking about becoming a teacher, but they started changing the criteria for teaching. I mean, from 1 year to 2 years, and I started thinking, well, am I sure I want to become a teacher? Because at the time as well, they were thinking about removing religion from schools, and at the time I was so young, I suppose I thought that was going to happen overnight, and I was thinking, okay, but I knew the faith aspect and religion side of things was important to me, so I said, what if I don't become a teacher? So I looked into healthcare chaplaincy, and I did my 2 year postgraduate degree in Maynooth, and then I entered into a training programme called CPE in CUH here in Cork.
So what is the dictionary definition of a chaplain? I mean, how would you describe a chaplain's work or job?
I suppose, you know, when we're in as a hospital chaplain, people usually understand it to be priests or nuns usually, because that's been sort of the caricature image put out there about hospital chaplaincy. And for a long time, that was the role of a hospital chaplain. But hospital chaplains are there for people to provide pastoral and sacramental and spiritual support when they're in hospital, and to be there for them and support them and encourage them and accompany them with very difficult moments in their lives. And I suppose as well, chaplaincy represents that faith dimension in people's lives too, so they lean on that and request a chaplain to come into their lives and help them and support them during very difficult times.
So you're a chaplain now?
I am.
You were meant to be a religion teacher.
I know.
I'm confused.
I was confused too, yeah, I suppose, you know, like I often think, you know, people say like, you know, if you didn't become a chaplain, what would you have done? And I said like, you know, that teaching was on my mind, but I suppose it's, there's, you know, I went down this road not knowing really was it for me or not. And when I did my first unit of CPE, it's a 12-week programme you do initially, and you do units over a couple of units, two or three units, to be accredited and certified as a healthcare chaplain. And when I was doing my first unit, I was saying, okay, like, if this is not for me, I'll leave it. But I fell in love with it, and I loved being with people, and I loved the value and support that it meant to people as well. And I suppose I kept persevering with it, and that was 7 years ago, so I'm still here.
Yes.
It's been very beautiful work to do with people and be invited into people's lives during very difficult moments.
Right, so many places to go. Let me ask you, for starters, did you ever want to join a convent?
No, I suppose.
Why not? Why are you laughing? I only asked you, did you want to join a convent? You're a chaplain, for God's sake. That's not a peculiar question.
I suppose, honestly speaking, yes. I probably would be kicked out after a couple of days in the convent.
For doing saying. What?
you know, it, like, interestingly, I do have an aunt that, she's a nun, Mary Crowley, and and I suppose people kind of say sometimes they link that and say like, well, were you inspired along the way, you know, and it comes from that sense of like, well, something must have motivated you, and maybe, you know, you to get into the nuns, and that's why she's doing this work. But no, I suppose, like, you know, there's huge sacrifice in that life, and I suppose I you know, like, patients saying to me like, you know, why wouldn't you want it? I always say, well, I want everything that you've had and family and life and you know, and just to, I can do like this work as a healthcare chaplain and feel fulfilled in bringing that faith dimension to people's worlds as well. And I suppose for that reason, joining the convent or joining the nuns has never really crossed my mind in a meaningful way, you know.
I'm still hanging on the question I asked you that you didn't answer, which was, why do you think you'd be thrown out of the convent?
If you ask my colleagues, no, they'd answer that perfectly fine.
Okay, put them on. Well, give us a sense. Is it because I still actually can't even guess.
Yeah, I suppose you're committing your whole life when you're a nun to the faith, and I suppose it's about the sacrifice that's been
Are you
asked
too much
you
crack?
Well.
Is that it? Like you're a messer or?
I suppose that's I wouldn't say I'm a messer as such, but I suppose I've always, when I was in college, I loved, when you're also training with priests when you're in college as well, and you can understand that you can see this life being very one-dimensional, that people that all, boring only into this work, when in actual fact, people with great lives enter into this work, and I suppose I never really, in a meaningful way considered it because it wasn't something that really passed my mind, and we just kind of went from there, really.
And had you do you hope to have a family in years to come? Would that be an aspect of it that you would preclude you from holy orders, if you like?
I suppose that would be the one aspect. I suppose, all right, if you ride into the convent with your family,
maybe that's why you didn't go into the convent, because you might want to have the family as opposed to coming in fully formed with six kids and a minibus out the back.
Absolutely, and of course, and that's a question actually lots of patients always ask me.
Really?
Absolutely. They look at me and go, well, you're not a priest and you're not a nun, therefore you must be some form of something. And and they can kind of, I suppose, because people aren't always aware of what a hospital chaplain do, more specifically a lay chaplain, what they do, they might feel you're a little bit pigeonholed, and then when you tell them that, I live life just like you, a relatively normal life, and I suppose people are surprised by that, and you tell them, absolutely, I have the same dreams that you have, and people relate on that level with you then as well.
You've said a few times that patients always ask me, do you deal with the nosiest patients in Ireland?
No.
They seem to ask you a lot of questions, personal questions.
Yeah, I suppose they're curious, and I'd be a curious person by nature. Anyway, okay. My colleagues often say that about me. And I suppose when they do meet me, when the nurse asks a patient, would you like the hospital chaplain to see you, they might ordinarily expect a priest or a nun to come and visit them. But I suppose when I arrive in, it's like are you sure? You're the hospital chaplain, and almost, are you sure you are? And because, they expect something else to arrive at their bed. And I suppose people didn't, by that very nature, ask questions because they didn't know this was something that lay people could do and be part of this ministry alongside priests and nuns and all ordained ministers.
And we've become so spiritually diverse, I suppose, that people don't necessarily want a nun or a priest, but they do want somebody who they believe can help them out at this critical moment in their lives.
Absolutely, because when people are in hospital, and I always maintain this, that when people are in hospital, some of the values and preferences that they might have had before could change. When you ask someone in isolation, would you like a hospital chaplain to visit you when you're in hospital? Outside the four walls of a hospital, these things may appear very black and white. You may go, oh no, that wouldn't be for me. Mm-hmm. But I suppose when you're going through crisis, those things can change, and you do need that support. And they want someone that can provide that spiritual and, I suppose, emotional support to them as well. And I work very closely alongside my ordained chaplains as well. And I suppose what we offered at times can be different because they can offer the sacramental support, whereas I don't. You offer the accompanying with them and supporting them the same way they do as well. And when people are in crisis and they are in difficulty, you're there for them, you support them and help them as best you can, and just be a presence with them, and someone that they can speak to openly and honestly and know that there's no judgment. They don't have to be reserved on what they share with you, but simply to be themselves and share what's on their minds and what's in their hearts.
Well, let's talk about some of the people you've helped, and I'm keen to point out that you very kindly spoke to the relatives of the people we're going to talk about, to ask their permission to share their stories this morning. We are deeply grateful to them for that, because not an easy thing to do. So thank you to them in advance of this turn in the road, if you like. Talk to me about Dennis Caniff, for example.
Yeah, Dennis Caniff, he was... oh, he's a beautiful man. I met Dinis during, I suppose, the height of COVID in 2021, and 2020 rather, and his wife actually rang into the hospital chaplaincy at the time, and she said, you know, at the time they weren't married, but she said my boyfriend Dinis is in hospital, he was only in his mid 30s, and she said, you know, he's just been diagnosed with a brain tumour on Friday, and this was the following Monday, and she said, would you mind going visiting him, because he was also a little bit distressed, he'd misplaced his rosary beads, and she said, look, you know, would you mind calling down to him, because just to reassure him and just check in with him. So I went down and I visited Dinis, and it went from there. He shared with me, you know, that he was going for surgery the next day. He had been diagnosed with a very rare form of brain cancer, and you know, he was frightened. There was so much uncertainty ahead of him, and the road was scary. And simply, and I was just with him. We spoke, and he shared what was on his mind and what was in his heart. And then after that, he went for his surgery, and I linked in with Kate, I just checked in to see how she was doing. Okay, because for families too, they're so distressed when a loved one is unwell, and I kept that link up with her, and throughout all his treatment in hospital and outside of hospital, I kept the contact with Kate and Dinis. And when I first visited Dinis, he had a lovely picture on the side of his bed, with a picture of his family, his brothers and his sisters, and there's a picture of Kate. And I suppose from those moments you get to know about a patient's life outside of their illness, which is very, very important too, because illness can dominate someone's world, but in actual fact they have so much more in their lives as well. And so Dinis, one of Dinis's goals, Kate would often say to me, was, you know, to get to their wedding day. And they got married in September 2021, and I suppose at that point Dinis was very, very unwell. And throughout all his journey, Dinis was very resilient. Like, you go into Dinis and you might expect, like, to go into someone that almost was almost depressed about where they were at, but Dinis was hugely resilient and very matter of fact. Like, you know, he'd be saying, we're going to get on with this now, and there's going to be no getting upset and no tears, and, you know, we have to beat this best we can. And Kate often would say, you know, that, you know, medics and chaplains and anyone from any multidisciplinary team can offer so much to a patient, but you can't prescribe hope. And it's so important when you're with patients and families that you be hopeful with them, because that's all that they have to hang on to at times. And Dinis's faith was a huge aspect of his life as well, and he got huge comfort from it. And unfortunately, 7 weeks after they got married, Dinis passed away at the end of October, the 29th of October 2021. And you know, when I spoke to Kate about coming on to talk to you, Ryan, I mentioned about, you know, that, you know, when I think about the lives and the people that I've met and dealt with over the few years, that Dinis came to my mind. And and she often said that Dinis always said that if he was to get better, he would share his story with you on your show. And she just felt that this was another way around sharing his story, because he was hugely, hugely important, and he was very important to us in chaplaincy, and his needs too for to be anointed by the priest that used to visit him as well. And just very, very special, and these people have a huge impact on people's lives around them as well, and to his community too as well in Bandon. They're very, very special people.
You know, that's so poignant. I didn't, you know, at the end of your story, that he would have been sitting in front of me here telling it himself if he had made it through. But I'm so happy in some strange way that he did get to tell his story through you and through Kate and her kindness for you to share the story. So thank you for that. And condolences to Dinis's family and to Kate and everyone around him. And as you say, in Bandon, thank you for that. And it illustrates perfectly the support you offer, the crutch, if you like, at such a time. And you spoke to the Nocton family and Emma's family about her story. Emma, as you say, she was very young, wasn't she?
She was very young. Emma was only 26 years of age. I met Emma, actually, it was around this time last year, that beginning of January last year. Emma was transferred from Galway to the CUMH here in Cork. And Emma had a very rare form of liver cancer that she was diagnosed at 16, and she went undergone huge treatment for it in America and here in Ireland. And when Emma came to CUMH, she came there because she was pregnant with twins at the time. And I suppose Emma, very early on her time in CUMH, she requested that the chaplain come to see her. And her mother, Pauline, was with her throughout all of her time in CUMH, as her family were. And She gave birth to her beautiful little baby boys, Danny and Kai, on the 25th of January. So she was only a couple of weeks in hospital, and they were born at 25 weeks and 6 days. And they were tiny. Danny was only 1 pound, 7 ounces, and Kai was 1 pound, 9 ounces. And it was a hugely frightening time for Emma, because Emma was battling with cancer, and she was, you know, trying to keep going for her little two little baby boys that she really wanted to give life to as well. And they stayed with us, and there was a, you know, I suppose for the neonatal staff too and the maternity, this was a hugely challenging experience as well for them, because you had a very young girl, very young mother, and two very young little small little baby boys who too were up against it as well. They were so small. And I suppose I was invited in as my fellow colleague chaplains too were invited into their lives to support them during that very difficult time, because there's so much uncertainty. And Emma, you know, in our conversations we shared with each other, you know, she'd often talk about her hopes and her dreams for Danny and for Kai and for herself. And I suppose as part of that journey too, you know, that when you're with a patient, that it's so important to stay in that place of hope with them as well, because they need you to be, despite, you know, what you might be seeing around you. So Emma was a beautiful girl, and she went home to Galway with her two little baby boys at the end of February last year. But unfortunately, Emma passed away on the 27th of February at home in Galway, in her home in Oranmore, with her family and friends gathered around her. And little baby Danny and little baby Kai were in the neonatal unit in Galway then, and little baby Danny passed away 1 month after that. Only 2 months old, Danny passed away in Galway. And I suppose for Emma's family, Pauline and Tommy and her siblings, Jack, Tommy, Katie and little Noah, and for them too, to be there for them as well, is hugely important, as it was for the staff on both Force Out and the neonatal unit, because these are life events that don't make sense to us, you know. Here we're even a person in such difficulty, but I suppose little baby Kai did well, and Kai is going to be 1 year old tomorrow.
Tiny little golden moment in an otherwise desperate story.
Absolutely. Yeah. But again, another person who, you know, the service of chaplaincy, I suppose, meant a lot to them. And they often would have said to me, you know, if chaplaincy wasn't there, we don't know what would replace that support, you know. And it's just being there with them and journeying with them and supporting them in the best way, you know, how I'm meeting them in where they are at in that moment.
We don't have time to talk about others, but we are grateful to Con's family and Leo for talking to you about talking to us, and baby Dara and Marguerite as well this morning. And you've really enlightened me, I have to say, about the work you do. But I think you're probably speaking on behalf of chaplains all over the country.
Oh, absolutely.
In so many different areas of society. And there's a lot of appreciation for chaplains coming in this morning. Julianne, it's really good to talk to you this morning, and thanks so much for sharing your story.
Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Good luck with it all, and stay away from the convent, obviously.
Thank you, Ryan. Take care.
They don't need you there. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Julianne Crowley joining us this morning, chaplain at Cork University Hospital, CUH and CUMH. And as Gail says, I was very impressed by my experience with the chaplain a few months ago. I asked for a chaplain to visit my teenage son when in hospital. Within an hour, a chaplain arrived at the bedside. And somebody wants to know who pays for the chaplain, the salary, because if it was a priest, it was the church. And the answer is the HSE, just to clarify that, at 13 minutes to 10.